Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
Time for a Coolest Conversations throwback in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Remember to follow and subscribe, rate and review. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and my interview with Tom Peterson, bass player in Cheap Trick, originally aired December the 22nd, 2017, and coincided with the use of their holiday song, Merry Christmas Darlings, as our coolest song of the week, off their album Christmas Christmas. We speak about the recording of that album, the band's love of Roy Wood, the beginnings of Cheap Trick, Tom's hiatus and return to the group, and also his passion project, Rock Your Speech Music Therapy Foundation for Children with Autism. Before we start, let's hear some of Merry Christmas Darlings, and then I'll be joined by Tom Peterson on your Coolest Conversations throwback presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Manfred here, and joining me today for our Coolest Conversations is a very special guest, Tom Peterson from Cheap Trick. How are you, Tom?
I'm fine, Manfred. How are you?
I am excellent. So happy to have you on the phone with me now. Now, so the band, Cheap Trick, you've been around some 44 years. You've had like 18 studio albums, but you've never done a holiday album, never a Christmas album till now. What took you so long?
Well, we'd like to do one every 40 years, so we're getting ready to gear it up to do our next one. Our record labels just brought it up. They said, hey, would you like to do a Christmas record? And we hadn't ever really thought about it yet. Well, you think about it during Christmas usually, and then it's too late, and then you just don't do anything about it. But if it comes up in the spring, and we had been in the studio recording another record, so we were done doing that, and we kind of went ahead and did it. We weren't thinking that much about it. And we didn't really want to do a whole bunch of standards and stuff. It wasn't really anything we were interested in. So we just kind of started picking songs from other artists that we like. And, you know, what did they do for Christmas? So that's what we kind of did. And we wrote a few of our own. And here we are.
Well, Merry Christmas, Darlings, that's our coolest song of the world this week. It's one of three original Christmas songs you have on the album. And as I read it, it's credited to Robin, Rick, and yourself. So how did you guys come up with that tune?
Well, I don't really exactly remember. We were just kind of throwing a bunch of ideas together, you know, and it's like, This sounded cool. Robin came in with this really cool idea, and we just one thing led to another, and it worked.
And so how long did it take to record the album? You mentioned being in the studio working on another full-length project, and this was tacked on at the end, or how did you...
It was after that. We weren't still in the studio. We were done, and then this Christmas thing came up. It's like, well, can we... So we went in and rehearsed for one day, just kind of ran through what we were going to do, and then went in, and we didn't take us more than a week, I think, to do the whole thing.
Wow.
Well, you know, I don't even really remember. You just kind of go in there, and you're in there, you know, thinking about it 24 hours a day, and then you're done, and then you completely forget about it. Like, what songs are on there? The worst part of it was almost every song had the word Christmas in the title, so we were having a heck of a time figuring out what songs we were talking about, so we just had to really go by the artist read, oh, this is the Slade song, or that's the Roy Wood song. And it's like, okay, I don't know what the title is. It's Christmas something or other.
And then one of your own songs, you named it Christmas Christmas. So there you've got it. You've got a double going on there, too.
Make it extra confusing for us.
I'm glad that I was going to ask you about the criteria for selecting a song, so you already touched on that. But one of the covers that you do on there, I was really happy to see, was the Roy Wood tune, the Wizard song that you do. And yes. I figured, well, that makes sense. You guys big Move fans, you know.
We're big Roy Wood fans. We've covered a lot of his stuff. We were actually one time in New York City at Irving Plaza. We were in his band, and we were his band. We did all the cool Move stuff and Wizard songs. That was fantastic.
Oh, that's cool. So I mentioned Cheap Trick being around some 44 years, and your history with Rick Nielsen predates that. Did you guys play together in a high school band called the Grim Reapers?
No, we were in high school together, but we weren't working together at that time. It was after that we put another completely different group together, and he had the band named Grim Reapers that they were using, so we kind of used that, but it really only because they were you know, relatively popular in the area.
Okay.
So we get more work that way.
Well, that's, yeah.
We were going to keep that. We thought it was a cool name. And then when we eventually got signed to Epic Records, which happened just suddenly, we were opening a show for Terry Reid in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
And it must have been 1969. And we were, you know, one of the, I was now not in high school anymore. Rick and I were, our drummer and guitar player and singer were all in high school. And we opened for Terry Reid, and Terry had just signed a deal with Epic or something, and he was going to be the new hot thing, you know. So that's why he didn't take the Led Zeppelin gig, because he was going to, you know, take over the world on his own, I guess, strike out on his own, so to speak. So anyway, we opened for Terry, and all the guys, I think it was Mort Hoffman was the president of Epic at the time. They flew in from New York to see Terry. They saw us, and we got a record deal. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. We weren't even, wow, the music business, this is easy.
Oh, no. Well, that's right. You figured that this was so easy. Now the gravy train begins, and line up the groupies, and please pour the millions on our lap.
Well, no, we weren't looking at it that way. We, you know, right at first, you know, once we got the record deal, we got the wrong producer. You know, everything that could go wrong went wrong. So if anything, it should have, you know, dissuaded us from continuing. But, you know, we were, that's really all we knew. We were, you know, we were playing in bands since we were, you know, for several years. And that's really what we like to do. And that's what we knew how to do. And we just kept going.
So during the 80s, though, you took a hiatus of some 7 years. Why did you leave the band, and what prompted you to come back?
Well, we just, you know, it was just, we were having some disagreements about things, and we just one thing led to another, and we just parted ways at that point. And when we did get back together again, we kind of realized that, yeah, you know, this is really the way this band should sound. We were going to kind of do a side project.
Yeah.
And once we sat down in the same room and started playing, we're like, we all kind of looked at each other like, yeah, this is, you know, what are we doing? Let's just go ahead like as we started. So that's what happened. And then the label was happy about it because it was all new people at the label at that point in Cheap Trick's career. And they had some legal problems with the label and all this kind of stuff. So all that kind of stuff was kind of gone. And they were kind of starting over. And they go, okay, the new people came in and we want to get Cheap Trick back and, you know, back with some success here. And then just coincidentally, I was coming back at that time and they were like, oh, this is perfect. So, it, you know, it kind of just all kind of fell together.
Well, I spoke with Rick Nielsen earlier this year, and he talked about his guitar collection a little, and I've heard that you have a sizable one as well. Is that true?
No, I wouldn't refer to the collection. You know, we record all the time, and I record, you know, and so it's really, to me, a collection is having all sorts of different, you know, like, oh, I have every precision bass from every year and every color, that kind of thing. Not the way it is. It's anything I have, I use to record. If I don't like it, or if it's, you know, whatever the reason, you know, usually it's monetary. Like, you've got to sell the stuff. You know, price is no object. I'd have a lot more stuff. But, you know, it is an object. And you're like, do I need this stuff? And what do you do with it? And do I use that? No. So I kind of go back and forth. I enjoy, you know, guitars and basses, but I wouldn't really consider it a big collection. That, you know, I have like one of a lot of different things.
Well, you do have an eponymous line of Gretsch bass guitars, don't you? You've got your signature line.
That's right. I have two different versions. I have the 12-string bass, which I use all the time, and I have a 4-string version of it, the Gretsch 4-string, which is, you know, the same thing, like a White Falcon 4-string, and it's very cool.
It is,
but
very
live,
cool.
Live, really, all I use is a 12-string, but in the studio, I use 4-strings all the time.
So your passion project, I'm told, is Rock Your Speech. Can you tell us about that some?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a music company, really, that my wife Allison and I started. We create video and audio content for parents and teachers and music therapists, kind of as an additional tool for kids and students on the autism spectrum. Our son, young son Liam, who's now 10, is on the spectrum.
Okay.
And he was really the inspiration for us making music like this. It combines rock music with the basic principles of speech therapy, and it helps kids on the spectrum really find their voices through music. You know, there's so many people just in general are drawn to music, and, you know, our son loves it. And
so your son, has he seen you perform at the band as Cheap Trick?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, many times.
Yeah,
his favorite song is Dream Police, so he's got to know ahead of time. You got to be backstage and look at that. You got to see the set list and then read through it and find out where it is. You know, it's usually in the same spot every time. One night we threw him off. It's usually at the end. One night we started with it, and that totally threw him off. He couldn't understand what was happening.
Right.
No sense. So we can't do that again if he's around. But no, he's seen us plenty of times, and he's over there acting out everybody's moves, and they'll have a dummy mic or something over there, and he's just in ecstasy. He wants, you know, he loves it.
Oh, very cool.
When he was much smaller, we did this run of Sgt. Pepper shows in Las Vegas.
Oh, I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, we did a lot of them. Anyway, he was little, and we didn't know what he was going to do. And we're in theaters, so it was a comfortable situation. You know, you're sitting in chairs, you know, the theater chairs. So anyway, he sat through every show and didn't move.
Oh, wow.
Now, he does not do that with Cheap Trick stuff. He'll like, wait in back and play on his iPad or whatever, and then, what's coming up? And Dream Police is coming up. You better get out there. But Pepper shows, it was really funny. I suppose because he was little and stuff, and it wasn't as loud. It wasn't as, you know, abrasive as the stuff that we do normally.
Yeah.
So he loved it. He sat every night, and then right when it ended, he would come over to the side of the stage and be jumping around for joy and like, daddy, daddy, and hopping around. And our Indian ensemble and the other members of the orchestra and stuff said, that's the best part of the night. And when we get done, and there's Liam over there jumping for joy. It's like the sweetest thing ever. So it was really a nice thing. So he loves music.
Yeah.
It's hard to find people that really don't like music. You know, not everybody does, but almost everybody does.
Right. Well, I'd like us to hear another one of your original tunes off the new album. It's the title song, Christmas, Christmas. It's also the album's closer. Was that any one particular person's inspiration, or did that just sort of fall in together with everybody?
I think, I don't remember exactly. I think it's pretty, that was Rick's idea.
All right, cool.
But I have to look at the credits. I don't remember anymore. Every record we do, we get done with it. We, you know, we put everything we can put into it, and then it's all we can think about, and you hear it over and over and over and over, all these different, you know, ways. And then after it's done, we're like, okay, what's next? What's the next one? So we're always, right. It kind of, you put it out of your mind. We're like, I got to look at this. I could not, for the life of me, list off the top of my head what songs are on that thing. I have to look at the cover.
Hey, Tom, thank you so much for talking with me today on Our Coolest Conversations.
All right. My pleasure. Merry Christmas to everybody out there.
Yeah, we need to take a listen to the title track. It's Cheap Trick's Christmas album and the song Christmas, Christmas and Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe, Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it be slide, baby, diamond ring.